Welcome back to Full Circle Reviews. Tonight we're reviewing the 1983 Francis Ford Coppola's flick, The Outsiders, the complete novel edition. Mm-hmm. We have Kristen here hosting, joined by Luke.
That's me.
And Justin.
Suck it, Trebek.
Okay. And tonight's pick was a consensus pick.
Yes, it was.
This I'm going to call it a Luke pick for the mere fact that he knows the movie the best. He can kind of talk us through the
gayness
a little.
I do. I mean, even in my adulthood, I find myself going back to it every once in a while.
Yeah. So
I bet you do.
This is going to be a theme.
You're a problem. So anyway, we're calling this Luke's pick, even though I had suggested it. The movie came back into theaters, and I thought it would be a great thing knowing that Luke loves this movie, so we went and saw it together.
And it was one night only, wasn't it?
It was.
One night.
So, Luke, you want to talk us through the plot a little bit?
Well, it's pretty simple to sum up. It's a different time, a different place. It's kind of like any town USA. But there is a conflict between the greasers, which is kind of the hoods of the town, the ruffians, the bad boys, indeed. Yes.
Po folk.
And the socias, which are the rich kids. So it's basically a conflict between the two groups, but it's much deeper than that as well. And we take basically we're in the vehicle with the greasers. They are our protagonists in this.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very well.
I have a question.
Surmised. Yes.
How deep is it? Johnny.
Okay. So this movie actually stars Matt Dillon, Patrick Swayze. It has Tom Cruise.
It has like
Emilio Estevez.
Who doesn't it have? Let's put it that way.
Diane Lane, Robert Lowe.
More females.
Ralph Macchio and C. Thomas Howell.
Yeah.
So that's our main stars of this.
You did say Rob Lowe.
I did
say Patrick Swayze.
And Diane Lane.
I think there was one of the socias was played by, who was it?
It was a musician.
It was somebody who died. I know that.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
No.
Yes, I thought I had it written down.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on.
Anyway, yes.
It'll come to me in about 11 minutes.
He was actually the...
He played Randy.
Yeah.
Most well-known cast member at that point because this movie...
Leif Garrett.
I'm impressed.
Good job.
Leif Garrett. You don't have to correct me on everything. All right, go ahead.
Just Leif.
Anyway, particular movie takes place in a small town in Oklahoma. It's supposed to be taking place in the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. And like Luke said, it's really about kind of teenage rivalry and coming of age story. And
absolutely.
So, Justin, since this was your first time seeing the complete novel, what are your initial reactions to this?
I have some concerns.
Okay. Such as?
I like the movie. You know, it kind of brought me back to my childhood and made me remember a lot of things. But
was this required reading for you in school?
It was.
Yeah.
I believe fifth grade, if I'm remembering correctly.
Maybe I believe I read it in sixth.
Because in my school, we had we were assigned characters and we did the kind of where we're still seated at our desks, but each person reads each person's line like a screenplay, basically.
Interesting.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
No, we didn't do that. How many kids were in your class?
38. Some people were like narrators for part of the book. So
did you like switch off days?
Yeah, usually it would. But usually the person would stay the same person unless they were a narrator or like a stranger.
Because it's not that long of a book.
Right. Is that because there's only like six good readers in the class?
Can we get back on track here?
Dude.
Yeah. Okay.
You are in rare form today.
Okay. Where are we at?
So we're talking about your reaction to the movie.
Oh, yeah. So it brought me back to my childhood. But at the same time, it kind of, for some reason, made me think of like some creepy times when I might have been in a room alone with a pastor or a priest. Because for some reason there was like a lot of sexual undertones and there's not many females in this movie. And
I believe your quote was, where are all the fucking females?
Yeah, I really need to know where are all the fucking females. Like, I understand they were, you know, trapped with Francis Ford Coppola and he was getting them to do, you know, method acting. But I can't say I 100% agree with his method.
Okay, so you liked it. It reminded you of your youth with homosexual undertones. Excellent.
Yes.
Luke, your thoughts on the This is a complete novel. So again, this is a movie that was re-released. It was a 1983 movie. It was re-released with another 22 minutes of deleted scenes.
In 4K.
Yes.
With the soundtrack.
This movie is one of the, I'd say, four or five movies that I feel is untouchable. I feel it is... Justin? Okay.
It's Luke's turn.
Yes. Can I talk, please? Okay. I feel it is untouchable. I feel it is a masterpiece. And for what it's worth, your little gay undertones comment, I did not notice them until you started making a big deal out of them. Because there's so much else to notice. Because there's so much else going on. It's not... You look like you're about to interrupt me, so I stopped
talking. I'm not. Okay. You're fine. Wow.
Well, okay. Sorry. I'm used to it. So I feel it's kind of untouchable. It's a classic. And I truly, I mean, I with every fiber of my being, I hope this movie is never remade.
I agree with you. I don't think it could be. But the cast in this movie, I actually thought it was excellent. So this was my first time seeing the complete novel. I actually don't think I ever saw the original. I read the book. But I thought I had, but none of it rang any bells when we were watching it. So I don't think I actually saw the movie ever before.
Damn.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I found it really enjoyable. I liked a lot of the aspects of the movie. If I were to compare it to two other movies that I do like, which are West Side Story and Grease, obviously those have a musicality that's different. I prefer those stories over this one, but I really enjoyed this.
Sure.
I was happy to see it. And actually, it was really fun seeing a lot of these actors in their first starring and first debut roles.
Yeah, looking very young.
Very, very young. So this as a movie, this is a book that was written by S.E. Hinton. I believe it was Susan E. Hinton. Justin, is that correct?
Yes, but she went through a surname because she was only 16 or something when she wrote it. She was still in high school.
Yeah, wow. She started writing this at 15. Yeah. She wrote the majority of it at 16 and it was published when she was 17.
Wow, good for her.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
I say.
So this is a book that commonly, I'm not sure about other states, but in California at least, this is very, very commonly a part of school curriculum.
Yeah, it's
usually for 7th and 8th graders, but I believe we read it when we were a little bit younger.
Yeah.
So
I did too. I want to say it was like 5th or 6th grade for me.
Yeah. And we'd even talked to my mom about this and she said that she had read it and loved the book when she was in school.
Yeah. It was one of the few, I hated school, but it was one of the few that forced reading that I actually did enjoy.
So why do you guys think that this was required reading?
I've wondered that before. I don't have an answer for it, to tell you the truth. It's like, it's not, it doesn't paint a bad light on really anything. It doesn't incur.
Continue.
No, I'm cutting short because Kristen looks like she knows. So go ahead.
So I think off the bat, there's a number of themes in this movie that are relatable to students that are younger, high school, even a little bit younger, you know, whether it's theories on friendships, it's boys and girls starting to have, you know, hormones and starting to date.
Boys and boys.
There was no boy on boy action that actually happened. I agree. There were some vibes of undertones, but that's a very minute part of the movie. So that being said, I actually think it's to talk about divided community.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I think that's a huge theme in this movie. And it's between the greasers and the socialites.
Socias.
Correct.
Yeah, for sure.
Correct.
For
sure. So it has to do with, there's themes about family and brotherhood and friendship and loyalty, but there's also a huge
income inequality.
Yeah, that as well.
Very heavy.
Socioeconomic, yeah. But really it's a fear of the other that's explored in this, and that people will be people, there's human nature. And the reality is that people at all ages and all stages of their life, they yearn to be part of a sense of community. They search for a community. And when somebody is feeling like an outcast, like these greasers felt like an outcast of the society, they form together in their own sense of community against the norm.
Like out of necessity?
Yeah.
You're saying, I understand.
Yeah. And see, so
I didn't really, can I interject real quick?
Sure.
I didn't really feel like they were outcasts. I feel like they wanted to be who they were. And they're sure proud to be who they were. Everybody except for Johnny.
I'm sure it wasn't always like that.
The book is called The Outsiders.
I know.
It's about the group of people that don't fit in with the society and how they bonded together and what their sense of community became.
Yeah.
Because they were outsiders.
Well,
That was a pretty sound defeat right there.
Pretty sound.
I also think that the movie and the book fast forwarded to their community already developed. It wasn't a developing community because there's some people that are a little bit older that are very much a part of this.
True.
Environment. So it really does come down to, it turns to an us versus them.
Definitely.
When there's divide and there's a individual versus community is the other theme I want to kind of go into.
Okay.
It's very much a sense of belonging to something. And so what happens is when you have an individual versus a group identity, look at Pony Boy, right? Pony Boy very much identified as a greaser. He belonged to the greasers. He was a family member of the greasers. He belonged to that community, but one-on-one, his identity, he was able to relate to and talk to the different folks from the Sosas as individuals.
Yes.
And I think that was the most important theme and point of this whole story was the fact that one-on-one, they can identify. But in their group settings, you have your individual versus community belongings. Think of Diane Lane's character in this, Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
She very much identified with Pony Boy and with the greasers
individually,
but not at school.
No,
she even said, if you see me at school, don't be offended if I don't engage.
Right. And he understood.
And they understood that because she has her sense of community, but one-on-one, they can relate to each other.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
I think that the themes are really big and they're all aspects of human nature and society.
Well, well said. I can't debate that whatsoever.
Okay.
No, so, that's my way of giving you a compliment.
Thank there. You. I appreciate that. So that's
usually it's around the 40-minute mark when you come with the heavy shit. But
yeah, we're a little early this time.
Sorry, kids. No, I think that's a big reason why this book is explored. It is also, it just to the basic point that the main character is younger. How old was he? 16?
I thought 14? They said 14.
Okay. So,
because I know Johnny was 16.
Correct.
Yeah, I think 14.
So it makes sense to do a coming of age story with this boy who's going through growing up. He's starting to become attracted to women. He's got brothers. He has friends. He has community obligations, but he doesn't really fully feel like he fits there. He's a dreamer. He wants to be bigger than that. So I think there's a lot going on with his character that makes sense as to why they would address this with 12 to 14 year old kids and move in school.
Yeah.
So another critical element I feel of the book and movie is the part where Cherry says things are rough all over. So I think that is a huge, huge aspect that I wish the movie would have played off of a little bit stronger. I'm sure it was more addressed in the book.
Yeah, they never really showed the social life at all.
In the book, at the towards the end, I think when a lot of the conflict is happening, Pony Boy, that all of a sudden pops into his head, like just his memory of Cherry saying that, and it leads to some revelation. I can't remember exactly.
That makes me feel better because I don't remember the book that well. So that makes me feel better because I felt like that was so key and critical to the story and the plot, and it's just. It's so true because when you have your sense of community and your belonging, you understand your struggles, your world, what you're going through. And it's very easy to not understand or identify with what somebody else in another group is dealing with.
Yeah, look at it from a micro perspective.
Right. And, the reality is the greasers, a lot of their struggles were visible.
Yes.
They were poor.
They're income related.
But with the upper classers, a lot of their problems were internalized.
Yeah. First world problems.
Well, also in the book, when Randy is talking to Pony Boy in the car, like when they're having kind of the heart to heart
at the diner,
I want to say this is in the book that, he mentions that the boy that Johnny killed, Bob, that he always just wanted his parents to say no to him once, but he was given no boundaries.
Mm.
So when you talk about a different set of problems, the Sosas kind of their problems were all, like lack of guidance, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And, the reality is they're going to deal with the same struggles. Their parents are going to fight. There's going to be issues and struggles and all of these same phenomenons. But oftentimes it's less visible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really critical point that she brought up, that, you know, things are rough everywhere.
Well, and it's like having Granite Bay right next door to Rio Linda.
No, it's true.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
It's very true.
Yeah.
So with that all being said, kids, since we jumped into themes before I meant to, sorry, Luke, I totally cut you off. Who's your favorite character and why? Justin, you go first.
I don't know that I could pick one. I mean, I guess I'd have to go with Ponyboy because he's the one I most connect with. Obviously he's the main character, but he seems to be the only one who's really soul searching and trying to figure out not only who he is, but how to navigate the environment he's in, how to figure out his family life and be better for his family and be better understood, better liked, and, coming as the middle child from a family. I just really relate to that right off the bat.
Okay. Excellent. Luke.
Well, if you're asking me like who I kind of connect with and kind of see myself as, I guess, the first name that came to mind was 2-Bit, played by Emilio Estevez. When we had this conversation over our group text, the answers were quite different than probably what we envision ourselves answering. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 2-Bit, he's just kind of the, he's the one that takes it easy. He's always laughing. I guess I have a vision of myself that isn't really accurate, but I don't know why his name is.
Maybe it's what you want to be.
Yeah, I guess. I could say that.
Yeah.
But reality, the character that I find the most fascinating is Dallas.
Yes.
By far.
I agree.
And there's just a plethora of reasons. I think he's the deepest, and I think he's the most layered.
See, about 10 years ago, I would have said Dallas, but I was a completely different person 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's something I was going to touch on. We had our group text talking about this before, and each one of us, when we asked each other who we thought each other were, right, we're all looking at each other now as adults, mm-hmm. right? Who we've identified with probably closer to the age of the folks in this movie is very different.
Yeah.
Because we all have been in different, I think we've all been a different person in our younger years than we are in our adult ages.
No question. Yes.
Hopefully that is, you know, maturing as an adult.
So I have the text here. So can I, I'll just read off our answers. Okay. So the answer, when you asked what I thought you were, was Derry.
Okay.
And,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. The reason I had given that was, you have strength and fortitude. And that defines the role. Justin, when he was telling me what he thinks about me, he went for Steve, played by Tom Cruise, and cocky, intelligent, tall, and lean, tough enough to hold off four guys.
Damn right.
Which I'll take it.
Hell yeah.
Let's see. I thought 2-Bit for you, dude, because you're fucking hilarious.
Sometimes.
But let's see.
And I was an alcoholic, so.
So yeah, and you said Ponyboy for Justin as mm-hmm. well. But that's
yeah, so I said Ponyboy for Justin because I feel like Ponyboy wanted to be more than he was. He was a dreamer. He wasn't satisfied with just, you know, the other folks in the family were happy to be working at the gas station. They weren't really striving for more than that. And I felt like Ponyboy at his core was incredibly relatable to mm-hmm. anybody he came into contact with, and a dreamer,
which I would agree.
I think Justin is.
You think so?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
I daydream a lot, so I can see that.
Oh dear.
And who did you agreed with the Derry?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay. And Kristen's synopsis, last one is Kristen's synopsis of me, which is soda. Thank you. Because he has some eyes that you could just fall into and stay for all eternity.
And he's a snuggler.
Rob Lowe is beautiful. No, I felt like you were relatable to Soda in that Soda tends to be kind of the rock and the buffer and the support system. And he's the good brother that tries to balance everything. Mm. And I think you have a very calming aspect to your personality.
I appreciate that. Cause I don't see it when I think of myself, but thank you.
Well, that's introspective versus
agreed,
you know, yeah, outside.
Agreed.
But
I think just about anybody who has anything invested, any thoughts invested in this movie at one point or another thinks like who do they relate to the most? So it's probably a question that just about anybody who's seen this has asked themselves.
And I think that's one of the strengths of the movie is that there are so many different characters and they are incredibly well developed. And they there's aspects of each character that I think most people could find relatable, at least at some point of their life, to at least one or more of the characters.
True.
You know, when I was younger, so Justin mentions when he was younger, he felt more like Dally.
And I'm guessing that was because he was kind of a
rough around the edges.
When I was younger, I was a little more troubled. I kind of lost that dreamer mentality and fell into a darker side of the world, I guess I could say. Dark side of the moon. And I relished in it. Like, I just wanted to be bad and thought it was cool and thought it was me and thought to be successful in life, like, I just had to find better ways and bigger ways to be bad. And I kind of feel like that's how Dally was. Like, he 100% loved who he was. Yeah, and did not want to do different. He was not sorry for his mistakes. You know what I mean? But at the same time, cared for people, you know, had people's back, was willing to sacrifice for others. And
yeah, he was the first to react to help the boys.
Yeah, was still a good person at heart, but just on the wrong path.
Yeah.
Oh, Dally was very capable of good. I mean, his love for Johnny, I think is more defined in the book as well.
Probably.
But his love for Johnny, I mean, he'd stick up for any of the gang. He treated him like shit sometimes, of course, yeah. Just like any.
That's what the bad boy does.
Pretty much. But when it comes down to it, like in the scene I'm pointing to is when Johnny tells Dally to leave Cherry alone when he's harassing her at the movies.
Yeah.
And in the book, I think it said that Ponyboy tells Johnny that if any of the other gang members had done that, Dally would have slugged him. But because it's Johnny, he let him get away with it and just kind of sulked off. Like that.
Okay. Interesting. So, I mean, for me, my favorite character in the movie is Dally. I think he's crazy dynamic. I think he is interesting. He's fun to watch. You don't quite know what he's going to do. And of course, he has to be the tragic character.
Yeah.
Or one of, I should say. But as a younger female, I absolutely related to Cherry. In that I came from a very upper middle class, you know, society and family. And I couldn't stay away from the bad boys. And I liked them a lot. And
why?
I've always wondered that too. Why girls flock to them.
So for me, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, oh, you have a record. Heck yeah, man, I'm in. It was more of the personality. And there is a stigma a little bit more with the keeping up with the Joneses type personality of the socias. I can't pronounce that. The sociolites that you have to be a certain way. If you're going to be a Harvard student or you're going to be a part of any of these affiliations, there's a certain kind of behavior and mannerism to have. And mm-hmm. The quote unquote bad boys don't follow those rules. They make their own. They play by a different set of rules. They're a little bit more wild. They're a little more spontaneous. They're a little more fun.
And there's a little essence of danger there that can be attractive. Yeah,
absolutely.
Like standing next to the fire. You just try not to get burnt, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I don't have a history of getting in trouble myself, but I have a history of dating boys that did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can relate to her in that she's trying to help them, wants to be a part of their group, but doesn't really fit in there. So Luke, what about you when you were younger?
When I was younger, I was a total goofball. I mean, that's why 2-bit speaks to me so much. But, I mean, my dad and I were kind of constantly butting heads because I never took anything seriously. Like I remember any kind of group photo of me or any kind of sports photo, I was always making a goofy face. It was just, okay. I was just dying to make people laugh. And that's
how 2-bit comes. Also part of insecurity as well.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, that felt good. Thank you.
I was genuinely asking.
I would assume. I mean, I would definitely assume I felt insecure. But who doesn't it when they're
everybody has their insecurities.
Yeah, even the most like put together person has
insecurities. Especially when hormones are raging.
Yeah, I agree.
So, well, interesting. Okay. Well, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about the deleted scenes and what was added back. Luke made a comment when we left the theater that he could tell us every scene that was added back. And I'm curious as to what those scenes were, if you can recall, because I know it was over 30 minutes were cut initially and they added 22 of those back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, coming out of the theater, I would have been able to answer that question, okay. But off the top of my head, the one that stands out the most is definitely the scene where at the very end, when everything's resolved, for the most part, Dallas is dead, Johnny's dead, and the Curtis brothers are having their dinner, and Derry and Ponyboy are going at it again. Mm-hmm. And Ponyboy asks Soda, asks Soda, it's not so simple, is it? When Derry mentions something about, if you don't like how I run things, you can just get out. And Soda just snaps and says, God damn it, leave me out of this, you guys.
Yeah.
And then runs out and they chase him down. It's a pretty long scene. And it's also one that I'm surprised was cut. They chase him down. They have a heart to heart where the Curtis brothers seem to finally vocalize their issues with each other. Mm-hmm. And I guess Soda is there to try and make sense of what, of Derry's true feelings for Ponyboy and vice versa, and telling him the true meaning behind it. Cause Ponyboy thinks it's the opposite. Ponyboy thinks Derry hates him, mm-hmm. and only loves Soda. And Derry thinks that Ponyboy is just kind of a dreamer and doesn't take anything seriously and doesn't understand why he takes things so personally when he gets mad. So Soda has the heart to heart that he asks him not to ask him to take sides anymore. I just can't do it anymore. We're all we have now.
Yeah.
And it's a real emotional scene.
It is.
And it's like the typical, I want to say, father-son relationship between Ponyboy and Derry. It's, mm-hmm. you know, what every teenage boy feels about their dad, no matter how good the relationship is. Anytime there's conflict, you can't help but feel that way. Right.
Yeah, I would agree.
But the other scene that I want to talk about, it's not a deleted scene, but it's very powerful. And it's when they get reunited at the hospital. It's the first time you really see Derry's love for Ponyboy when they're reunited.
Yeah.
Is the first one that comes, and Ponyboy runs into his arms. Derry stands there knowing he pushed Ponyboy down, and Ponyboy has a right to be mad at him.
That's why they ran away.
Why he ran away and all this shit happened. But Patrick Swayze, hats off to him for his acting here, because he mm-hmm. just breaks down. I mean, he looks so uncomfortable standing there, like, you know, he wants to hug him, but he
doesn't know if he's welcome.
Exactly. And then Ponyboy runs into his arms, and it's just awesome. I mean, I've looked up that scene on YouTube a few times, and it gets you in the feels.
Yeah, it definitely does. That's one thing about this movie. I mean, I think most people, at least, that would watch it would at least be having some feels at some point.
Oh, definitely.
If not, it's a challenge.
Might be a sociopath.
Yeah, I think that would be hard to not feel something. Like you said,
with all the different themes and the different areas of conflict and the coming of age tale that it naturally brings for teenagers, I mean, everybody should be able to relate to this.
And one of the other, I think the most notable deleted scenes is the scenes in the church with Johnny and Ponyboy were never as long in the theatrical cut.
Okay.
I mean, they added a lot there. Yeah. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but the scenes that were added had a certain feel to them that they just didn't fit a little bit for me. But it was a much longer sequence. And there's more, but a lot of them are kind of short. Off the top of my head, I can't remember them.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
No.
Because I got it from Google.
Okay. All right.
Using Google. Okay.
Fun facts by Justin.
Well, you know, we used up your memory, and I appreciate that you had all of that knowledge, because I don't. But I just figured we might want to know.
Yeah. So sure.
Apparently the opening scene is extended where Ponyboy is attacked by the Socs when he's walking home from the movie. I guess that wasn't in the original movie, even though for some reason I kind of remember that.
It was.
But what they say is that the principal greasers are also introduced, and later Ponyboy and Soda Pop talk to each other in their bedroom. So I think when, not him being attacked, but I think the aftermath, when they're chasing him home and he finally gets home, and then here come the greasers part. I might have been added, like when he throws the branch and stuff.
No, I could have swore I've always seen that. But I'm not debating you, but. Then you're talking the scene with Ponyboy and Soda in bed when Soda's telling him about Derry, you know, don't worry about Derry. He does love you.
Is that yes. What, okay. Yes. Before they lay down and.
Because a lot of these aren't technically deleted. Snuggle. They're extended.
They're extended. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So, yeah, they lay down and Soda Pop looks at Pony and says, big or little. And then they spoon.
Is this the first inkling you got of the homoerotic?
You know, theme? They're brothers. So. Really didn't bother me, but Rob Lowe was just so damn beautiful. You just couldn't think, you know.
Dude, I agree.
Yeah. He is pretty sexy. So are there any other scenes that
there you are. So there's an alternate scene in the church where Ponyboy imagines that Soda Pop and Derry are present.
I don't remember that. Was that in?
It was in the movie.
It was.
See, right? That doesn't sound right. Well, all right. Well,
extended, this is Google. Extended reading of Gone with the Wind.
Okay, that was in the church, I'm guessing.
Which that did, if I remember right, that played a big part in the book.
It did. It was a parallel.
Let's see. A small extension to Ponyboy and 2-Bit at the hospital where a doctor allows him access to Johnny's room after being denied entrance by a nurse.
I could have swore that was in there too. I mean, a lot of these you're naming off, I don't know why they would be deleted or like cut though. But go ahead.
I'm neither. Sorry. Following the death of Dally, Derry lashes out at the cops while Ponyboy faints. Later we see Soda Pop and Derry caring for him in bed while Ponyboy asks if someone is sick, not realizing that it's him.
That was in the book too, that scene. Soda is someone sick. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby.
He calls him baby.
Baby boy. A courtroom scene where Cherry, Randy, and Ponyboy all make statements, and then Ponyboy is acquitted and left in the custody of Derry.
That wasn't there. The,
was not.
Did some? Hey, no, hold on. I'm not debating Google here, but something's off with this because I remember all of these.
This is IMDb.
I have a feeling they just are talking about the scenes that were extended.
Yes,
like even by a couple of seconds. I'm maybe guessing. Okay.
Potentially, from what we've gone through, this should have summed up to the whole 22 minutes.
That's okay. Well, it sounds like it's summing up to the whole entire runtime of the movie.
It is a scene where Ponyboy runs into Cherry at school, but she walks away from him. Ponyboy's teacher also informs him that he is flunking, but allows him to write a paper on a personal experience in order to raise his grade.
And yeah, that could have been cut. That was kind of unnecessary.
But that's what brought the movie full circle. And since we are full circle reviews, I could appreciate that part.
Okay.
And the last one it says is a dinner scene where Soda Pop becomes angry that he's always stuck in the middle between Ponyboy and that's one you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
22 minutes right there.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, speaking of scenes and kind of theories, Justin, you had brought up your theory about the owl and the bunny in the church. Do you remember what your theory was on that? Because I thought that was really interesting. It was better than what I came up with.
You know, I wish I would have wrote it down because it was really good when I said it. But from what I remember, I saw the bunny. And we only see it for a glimpse, right? Just right when they get into the church.
See it.
Like you see the bunny kind of hiding in like the debris and the owl. I don't even think of like who's right or
when
anything.
They go in, I think that's when the bunny is seen. Like yeah, under exactly. The floorboards or something.
And then the owl's like up in the rafters.
Yeah.
Right. And so I feel like Johnny and Ponyboy were both the bunny at the beginning of the movie. And they were both innocent and kind of lackadaisical and more Ponyboy because Johnny had some conflict at home. But then after the attack on Ponyboy and then the conflict they got into the park, which led Johnny into it, really turned him into the owl and it turned both of them into the owl in the eyes of the town. They became like instead
predators.
Of they became the predators and everybody else's view. So it really showed like the transformation of the characters, but not by their choice. It was really forced on them by the environment that they were put in, the situations that they were pushed into.
Hmm.
See, I almost think that if you take it one step further from that, because I think that's great. I think that's spot on. But if you take it one step further, I almost feel that, yes, they went from the bunny to the owl, but by the time they were back in the church, they were back to being the bunny hiding out.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So, interesting. Yeah. Okay. I like it. Another point that you touched on earlier was your sensation of the homoeroticism. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, please do.
I just, for some reason, like, for me. When I first saw this movie, I was a lot younger, and I feel like when you're younger, you're a lot more innocent, and you don't pick up on a lot of things, like, especially when it comes to, like, drugs, violence, a lot of it, your perception's different. And now watching this movie, like, 20-something years later, I don't know. I was sitting there halfway through the movie and I just felt like I was watching the coming of age of two boys and it was going to turn into a love story at some point.
You're referring to Johnny and Pony Boy.
Yes. And then at the same time, I felt like there was a little something there with Johnny and Dallas and there was a little something there with Soda Pop and Pony. And
I think the something you saw was a fatherly kind of Dallas looking out for Johnny and not wanting. All right. Well, okay. I'm going to phase back to my Catholic school.
And there's nothing wrong with having homoeroticism in a movie. It's just something I didn't pick it up.
And previously. It's still debated. And a lot of
people, did because after the movie, I was sitting at home and I was like, I can't be the only one that feels like this. And so I looked it up and Essie Hinton was actually like pissed when like they redid this movie and came back out because it got popular again. Right. And a lot of people, you know, it came out 20 years later in the 2000s, 2004 or so. And culture was a lot different than it was in the 80s. Right. And so a lot of people wrote to her asking her if she specifically wrote the characters to be gay because she felt like there was a lot of homoeroticism in the movie. And a lot of people felt like that it was kind of a little bit of a love story at parts. And she was adamant that it was not, you know what I mean? But I'm not the only one.
No, you're not the only one, but you have to also take into account that in 2021 and in the last 10 years, anything could be found on the internet and there are some fucking nut jobs out there. So people see Jesus in burned pieces of toast for God's sake. So people can see like anything.
5 years ago.
You get what I'm saying though.
Yeah, but it also looked like Muhammad.
Okay, well, I'll say I didn't pick up on it until you fucking thrust it in my face and ruined one of my favorite movies.
I
didn't thrust
it, I just whispered it.
Okay, I'm going to interject here.
Okay, you go ahead.
I noticed a bit of it.
A bit? Because that's not what you told me.
No, I had. It was so, it's hard for me to be able to put my finger on what exactly felt that way. And you hadn't made a comment to me in the theater about it. So it's not like I was made biased to your comment. It felt, and I think it's because the love for the brotherhood, the love for each other was so strong. And I have a feeling that it was very much a empathetic, compassionate, and loving displays on the screen, but that there was no fucking females.
None.
I honestly think that that's why it led to that feel.
Yeah.
Rather than any actual debatable homosexual moments.
Okay. I think you're onto something there because Cherry never got popped.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Have we? Wow. Yeah. Wow. Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11. Okay. Yeah. Julia Roberts, only chick.
No.
Any gay themes?
No.
Mic dropped.
I don't know what point that proves my point.
Hold
right?
on. It's a very different movie though. You don't have the same kind of brotherhood and love and devotion to each other.
But you don't have them spooning either.
Shut up. I'm referencing your point that it's because there's lack of women. I'm referencing that only.
I think it's because my point was more, not so much that there's no women on the screen, but more so that that love and devotion was not expressed from any of the boys to the one female in the movie.
Well, I understand
I think
that.
It was unbalanced. And so that way it felt more, I'm not saying it was a homoerotic movie, but there were moments that I was like, okay, where are we going with this, kids? Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it was almost romantic. They're watching a sunset together and reading Gone with the Wind and snuggling at night. And, you know, how could you not
Okay, if you and I were hiding out in a church back in the 60s with no internet,
I can guarantee I would not be snuggling you. One, two, Gone with the Wind, not my style.
You certainly would be snuggling Spoon.
You would.
I would not.
You think I was sleeping that day on the couch, but I really wasn't.
Really?
Yes. Okay. So my whole point is I think a love story or a love element in this would have totally distracted from the main aspects of it.
And I agree. I agree with you. I'm not arguing that.
And it was the 60s. So, you know, homosexuality was not something that was prevalent or really out in the open in the 60s, regardless.
No. Where it is now. Yeah. It is more of a norm now.
If anything, I feel like an outcast for being straight these days.
Almost, right?
I mean, I'm really not exaggerating. I feel like I'm one of the minorities these days.
No, that's just your white privilege.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh my God. I'm a white male, so I was born privileged, misogynistic, and racist.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So let's take this back to the specific movie at hand here, The Outsiders, 1983, okay. Francis Ford Coppola.
We watched the 2004 version, though.
Yes, we did. So, gentlemen, are there other scenes or aspects of the movie we would like to discuss? Luke, are there favorite parts or least favorite parts? Anything along those lines you want to talk about?
The time in the church dragged like Linus's blanket for me. I know it was important. I know it was important and it was impactful, but it still dragged.
I feel like it was really important in the book, but not the movie. The movie didn't do a good job of capturing like the inner dialogue that made it so important in the book.
I can't debate, but the scene I'd like to only talk about that I like the most is the scene when Johnny dies and Dallas, who's this hardened criminal, the toughest member of the gang, doesn't let anything bother him. Life has just turned him tough as nails, cries, yeah, and slams his fist in the wall, runs out, points a gun at doctors and says, like, why do you even bother helping people? And there's something like they just die, and it just sets them off. And like it comes to the I think Ponyboy's attention that Dallas or Johnny was the only thing that Dallas ever cared about. And now
yeah,
Johnny was gone. Dallas had nothing to live for and reacted accordingly with suicide by cop.
Yeah. Interesting.
With an unloaded gun.
Yeah, they certainly harped on that a lot, but I can't really like fault the cops.
Doesn't matter. You point a gun at the cop.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely.
So, but that scene stands out to me the most because it kind of sums up, I think it's Dallas's coming of age at that moment. Like he can't posture. He can't pretend that things don't affect him anymore.
It's the straw that broke his back.
Yes.
100%.
And I do like that he just broke the law. Johnny's dead. He broke the law. He stuck up a convenience store or something like that. He calls Derry and without even a thought, Derry, we got to hide him. And they just start sprinting down the street to save him. I mean, there's that kind of sums up the greasers right there. Is it doesn't matter like what you guys are, what you do, where you came from. You're one of us. We're right. Looking out for you.
We're family.
Yeah.
I actually thought that was a really incredible character development aspect of Derry's character, right? Mm-hmm. Because Derry is at one point it's mentioned that he would be a sos if he was not,
if their parents hadn't died,
right? Not taking care of his two brothers. And he's really trying to set an example and take care of his brothers. And he gets frustrated when they act out and don't follow the rules and don't follow his lead. And he's kind of being pushed into a position he was not ready to be.
Oh, he's pushed parenthood. And at score, he really doesn't know what he's doing, but he's doing what he thinks is best.
And he's trying to tell them that, you know, the bigger picture is you might be frustrated with me, but if you screw up, they're going to put you in a group home.
Yeah.
And you won't have us.
That's kind of a constant looming threat throughout the movie is that Soda and Ponyboy could be taken away.
And I think that's his biggest fear. And when it really comes down to it, whether it's for the Rumble or it's to hide Derry, he's going to get down and take care of his family.
The Rumble when they were panning across all the greasers. And then when you get to Derry, thunder. You notice that?
Beauty.
Yeah. Oh, that too.
But. Patrick Swayze.
I mean, they were just all there trying to look as tough as they could, and it worked. They all look like badasses.
They did.
And they won.
Wasn't there some fun facts related to the Rumble?
There's a lot of fun facts related to the movie in general.
Okay. Yeah.
Shall we dive?
Yeah.
We
should.
Okay. So, S.C. Hinton obviously wrote this when she was a teenager. This book was a widespread used book in schools, and it was actually a school of students and teachers that wrote to Francis Ford Coppola out of Sanger, California. For all of you who know Sanger, shout out.
I thought they were in the Fresno area.
It is. Sanger is right outside of Fresno.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by puns.
Anyway, they wrote to Francis Ford Coppola and begged him to direct the book into a movie and to adapt it. And so he felt so moved by the love that these students and teachers felt for this book that he then read the book, understood the appreciation for it, and decided to make it a movie. So I thought that was really interesting. They actually went on to do two other of her books together.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Rumble Fish and Tex. And one of them actually starred Matt Dillon.
That would probably be Tex, I'm guessing.
I'm guessing that's Rumble Fish.
I think it was Rumble Fish. Yeah. I don't remember off the top of my head, though.
You know what's weird, interesting is we went to the Coppola Winery where they have like the museum of all his movies. The Outsider isn't there. There's no Rumble Fish or Tex. I wonder why.
Yeah, but they did like Apocalypse Now. They did what are the other movies that were there? Interview with, or is it Bram Stoker? One of the Dracula movies. Yeah, Dracula. Mm. So they had some of the like big
Godfather.
Time, yeah, costume and set designs. A lot of like costume or set designs that would be identifiable for the Outsiders.
Well, the jean jackets, the you know white shirt with the cigarette pack rolled in it.
That could be argued to be
social varsity jackets.
That could be Grease.
Yeah. I mean, no, I agree. It's kind of like any kind of props would be kind of commonplace.
Yeah. It's not like all that identifiable. A cape
or something like that, which is very unique.
I'm surprised it wasn't mentioned
at all.
But yeah, that winery is fantastic, by the way, everybody.
Shout out Francis Ford Coppola.
Hey-o. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting that they actually worked so well together. They decided to do two more of her books. And Francis Ford Coppola was so frustrated with Matt Dillon during this movie, because he was an 18-year-old kid and he just wanted to act out and party and didn't want to take lead, that Francis Ford Coppola actually scolded him harshly at one point. And S.C. Hinton had told him he needed to apologize and make it right with him. They end up working so well together after that that's why he starred in another of their joint films.
So really, he just needed a little authoritarian love.
Yeah.
Maybe he was just getting into character.
Maybe that's where Derry got his dad style from, Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about both the casting interview process and about the method acting that was kind of pushed onto these gentlemen that starred in this movie.
Okay.
So the casting process was really outside of the norm of how they would do the casting calls. And they actually would get the boys that wanted to star in this movie together, put them in a similar situation that they would have experienced in this book and saw how they'd react naturally.
Okay.
So they saw their...
Can you give an example?
No, I don't have an example.
I'm sorry I asked.
That's okay.
Right. Spot there. Sorry.
That's okay. No, they had said in the document that I'd read about it that they put them in like situations to see what their natural inclination would be to cast them.
To see what character they could be.
Who they'd be most natural, but they didn't give an example of like what that situation was.
I would love to know.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Outside at the diner.
Seems like if that was enough to be a fun fact, or
like throw them all in a room, a pack of cigarettes, a bottle of Jack and a switchblade and see what happens.
That might be it.
Dark.
Yeah, he really did.
It got dark there. Yeah. So then when it comes to like the method acting part of it, Coppola actually separated the greasers from the Sosas, and he actually paid the actors that played the Sosas a better daily per diem stipend.
Of course he did.
He paid them more money. He gave them leather bound scripts. He gave them better clothing. He gave them better accommodations, better food.
Oh, I think that's fucking brilliant, actually.
And then, so he caused a serious rift between the actors.
Yeah, it's like election year.
So their animosity on screen was really there.
Wow.
So he did an amazing job with that.
Damn. Say what you will, it worked.
It's brilliant.
One of the other things he did was he actually made Patrick Swayze and Rob Lowe and C. Thomas Howell. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. He actually made them stay in that house overnight and cook together.
Dude, he is.
Did they really spoon though?
Well, there was no heat in the house. He actually removed the entire side of the house. So the scene where they're at dinner and they're fighting and arguing and you see the camera basically pans from them arguing to Ponyboy walking out the door. Mm. They removed the side of the house to get that shot.
Insanity and dedication. It's a fine line.
Right.
Insanity and brilliance. Gone.
My God. Well, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it worked.
Yeah.
I mean,
they
got a classic.
So I thought those were both really interesting, the way he forced the method acting and the casting calls on them.
That's badass. I was just surprised that Nicolas Cage didn't get cast for this movie, considering That's his nephew.
That's so funny. I have a note about that.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. So Nicolas Cage was dying to be in this movie.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
And he actually auditioned to play either Dally or Derry.
Oh, that would have been bad.
That would have been a fucking travesty.
And Coppola didn't think he was ready for the part. Didn't think he would do a good job and turned his own nephew down. And Nicolas Cage was so pissed because he spent a month where he tried to force his own method acting prior to the casting that he locked himself in a room. I'm sorry. It was 2 weeks, not a month. Locked himself in a room for 2 weeks with a picture of Charles Bronson trying to feed off of the badass vibes.
Okay. Nice. To quote George Costanza, I say this with a staunch record of heterosexuality. He's just not good looking enough to be one of the greasers, especially when he was young, like Raising Arizona time and everything. Yeah. He was a goofy looking motherfucker.
And I love Nicolas Cage.
I mean, if they had another character named like, you know, like Tidbit or something like that. Or
Alonzo.
Alonzo. Okay.
I don't know why. That's
or Cameron Poe or something. Or
anyway, he was really so pissed.
Yeah.
Back on.
All right. Come on. Let her talk.
He was so pissed that he stomped off the set, was furious. And then actually ended up being an extra in the Rumble scene.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
So we got to take some of that aggression out.
Yeah. So he was still in it. In fact, Coppola even had his daughter? Yeah. Sophia Coppola is his daughter. And she played the little girl that came up to Dally when they were in the car asking for 15 cents.
You got a dime?
Yeah.
Get out of here, kid.
Yeah. So she was on the set all the time that they wrote that. For her.
That's awesome.
That. Yeah. So cool. I thought those were kind of fun, familial facts.
Yeah, definitely. There. It seems like there's a lot of cameos.
Yeah, there's another one, actually. Funny you brought that up.
Okay. Really?
So S.E. Hinton actually was a cameo.
I think I know. Oh, go. Sorry.
Do you? Go ahead.
Dallas's nurse?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good.
Yes.
And see, knowledge you learned 14 years ago sticks with you.
Right?
Just take Ginkgo biloba.
What were you doing in 2008?
I don't know. It's just a random number I came up with.
Seven.
I know math.
Don't focus on the number.
We were told there wouldn't be math. So that being said, they were so low on funds with the production that she was supposed to be given a $5,000 check for the rights to the book. They couldn't pay her that. They only paid her $500, but she was so fond of Coppola that she agreed to be a cameo in the movie.
Kudos to her.
She got $500.
$500.
For the rights to the book.
Yeah.
She must have known it was destined for greatness.
So, as far as also family bonds in
ties.
This. Carmine Coppola, which is Francis Ford Coppola's father.
Such a, like,
Italian mafia name. It is a mafioso name for sure. He composed the original score and the original song "Stay Gold" that was performed by Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. Or someone that it didn't sound like him at all to me.
It was him.
I know. But he was very upset with his son for re-releasing the movie and changing the whole musical score to a lot of Elvis.
I have to agree with him. Like, the movie just had a totally different feel because the entire thing was Elvis and it was like a little Beach Boys-y too. A lot of it was like some of the oceany type music and stuff, and it just gave the movie a different vibe.
But it's the epitome of if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, don't fuck with something that's
like
already.
It was still cool. It was awesome, but I just felt like we missed out on some of the feels that we should have had in some of the scenes, and maybe that's why I have totally different perspective as well.
Well, a movie of this caliber, you tweak something like that, and people that love it and kind of have seen it multiple times, they won't be able to look away. They won't be able to get it out of their head.
Yeah.
So it just bothers them more than it would somebody seeing it for the first time.
Right. It's not necessary.
So did that happen for you?
No.
No.
That happened to me about the heterosexuality or homosexuality thing you burned into my brain.
It wasn't my fault that I made you realize it.
No, you made me see things I shouldn't have.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So back to the casting. So Dennis.
I saw them.
Dennis Quaid actually turned down the role of Dally. That's who they wanted to cast.
Thank God.
Sarah Jessica Parker, Brooke Shields.
Foot face?
Yes. Turned down the role of Cherry.
Good.
Who is the other one here?
I thought Val Cherry Kilmer, was very attractive.
Val Kilmer was offered the role of Ponyboy, which he turned down.
Wow.
And Mickey Rourke was offered the role for Derry.
I could actually see that one. He's already rough around the edges.
Yeah, I could too.
But you can't replace Patrick Swayze.
No, I'm not saying they should. No, but you can't. I could understand.
The way he hopped that fence, it was like Dirty Dancing all over
again. The way his arms, his triceps, hey-o. So cute. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Is that a wedding ring on your finger?
It might be. So fun fact about the cast themselves. So okay. Matt Dillon and Diane Lane briefly dated while filming this.
That really doesn't surprise me.
And they broke up so quickly that the animosity between them that was shot while they were at the movie theater was all natural.
Nice.
Dude.
And method after they broke acting. Up, he started teasing her and poking fun at her, and she was already insecure about her looks. And so she truly hated him for years.
What is there to be insecure about?
Yeah. She was beautiful.
She's fucking breathtaking.
She was beautiful.
Not like Angelina Jolie breathtaking, but still like.
She was adorable. Yeah, she really was.
She is worthy of heart attacks.
So one of the other things that was interesting while they were filming this is that the boys were stayed at a hotel, and they only had the supervision of like Coppola, the casting, the crew, and S.E. Hinton. Okay. There was no parents. And so because he had the accommodations better for one group than the other, they actually broke out into a straight fight in the lobby. And several people got dunked into the fountain in front of the hotel with attempt of drowning, where the boys had said, no, we weren't actually trying to drown him. We were just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
The hotel had the fountain removed.
Really? These are legendary fucking behind the scenes. Yeah,
these aren't just so much fun facts. Like, this is some serious shit you got going on here.
Yeah. Oh,
nice.
Thanks.
No, you've outdone yourself.
I feel like these are like the extended version of the special features of the film.
Oh, see, I thought this stuff was so interesting. The casting. So, the house we talked about with the side of it being removed, obviously they put it back together. Okay. And a rapper named Danny Boy O'Connor bought the house.
Who the fuck is Danny Boy O'Connor?
And he made it a museum for the Outsiders.
No shit.
It's a house in Oklahoma. So he saw it was for sale and it was really run down. And so he bought it, fixed it up, and he made a museum for the movie.
Yeah, people love their memorabilia.
So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
The movie that was playing at the drive-in was The Beach Blanket Bingo, the 1965 movie.
Yeah, it was. I remember seeing that.
Let's see. What else?
Oh, Danny Boy O'Connor was a member of House of Pain.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, you didn't know that, Justin?
I sure the hell did not.
Yeah.
So the other movie that was playing within the movie was at the very beginning and at the very end, because the movie came full circle.
Okay.
Where Ponyboy walks out of Paul Newman's movie, The Hustler, in the opening scene. Yeah.
Okay. And that's why the two things on his mind were Paul Newman and A Ride Home.
Yes.
So gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know what movie it was. And I was like, okay. I mean, I love Paul Newman too, but it's an interesting.
Those blue eyes.
Yeah.
He's got nothing on Rob Lowe's, man.
I don't know about that.
The scene where Dally was shot, the line where he yells, "You'll never get me alive," was 100% ad-libbed.
I believe that. I do believe that.
Nice.
That was in the moment filmed. The other thing that was really interesting about the production of this is Coppola shot the movie pretty much straight through, start to finish. So they didn't do different scenes and piece it together.
He chronologically
shot the film.
That's rare.
And he told the cast, "We will continue filming no matter what. So if something comes up, you forget a line, you make it happen. You make it work.
His determination is like unmatched legendary.
He's an incredible director.
No debate.
So one of the parts specifically of that is when Two-Bit finds a new hat. I don't know if you remember that scene.
Oh, yeah, when he's walking Johnny and Pony.
Yeah. That was cool.
It actually blew off a crew member's head from the fan while filming, shot onto the scene, and he completely ad-libbed that whole part. Like, oh, I have a new hat.
Really, just fucking with the guy?
Yeah.
And they threw it in the movie.
And then kept it.
It was a fan because they're trying to mimic like it was windy out.
Correct.
So they could be cold. Okay, cool.
Correct.
Good for you, Emilio. Probably learned that trick from Charlie.
So Winning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the first punch of the rumble scene.
Ponyboy gets hit in the face by a Soch.
It was a complete accident.
No.
It was raining. It was windy. It was muddy. And it was a stunt double that was supposed to act like he's hitting him and punched him and knocked him straight out.
It makes sense because it looks like
he was unexpected.
He was looking at somebody and he turned back and immediately like reacted.
The guy slipped and it was an accident. Hit him right in the face, knocked him out. And then he got carried off the set and they kept filming.
Well, remember, we're filming no matter what.
Yes.
So
they were getting down on that scene right in the mud.
Sweaty, muddy boys wrestling around.
It was like Greco-Roman to the max.
Yeah. I actually didn't think it was that bad.
I know.
Nor did I.
I just wish they would have oiled up first.
So the scene where Matt Dillon falls out of the chair at the movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
Was an accident.
Chair broke?
He just fell.
Yeah, he just leaned over too far. Nice. Trying to act cool.
And so there's a part where Ponyboy actually starts laughing and looks straight at the camera because he's not sure if they're supposed to keep going. And Coppola's like, keep going.
Yeah, I do remember that part.
And then the last one of those kind of fun little facts is that Tom Cruise was so nervous before doing the flip off the car.
Okay.
So Patrick Swayze actually coached him on how to flip and what to do and how to pull that off. He was so nervous. He walked over to S.C. Hinton because she was on set the entire time. Uh-huh. And she consulted through the entire thing. He walked over to her and said he was so nervous. He didn't know what to do. He didn't think he could do it. And she goes, well, maybe you should just throw up. He's like, well, I mean, I don't really have anything in my system. So she walked him to the food truck, made him eat a bunch of raw eggs until he threw up. And right after he did, he looks at her and goes, you're right. I feel better. Walked over and flipped off the car.
What the actual fuck? Dude, are you not going to utilize that now? Anytime you have to jump off a car and do a flip, are you not going to do that now?
It depends if it's a backflip or a front flip.
I suppose.
Front flip, maybe. Backflip, I got it down.
I suppose.
Backflips are way easier than front flips.
She doesn't like it when I do backflips, though.
Not off the boat.
No, me either.
So, I lied. There's one more. So, Tom Cruise actually, it took them a week to film the rumble scene because they kept filming it.
Damn,
so
that's a lot of punches.
They could get the different angles, and they got so injured, all of them, from doing a week of fighting. Tom Cruise actually had to have dental work done because his jaw was split.
God damn lucky guy, because he sure as hell needed it.
What was wrong with his teeth, Justin?
I don't know. They look like they were going to try and eat his tongue.
I thought he had that condition where like his top row of teeth was like over too far. Like, so he didn't have two straight down.
His two front teeth were like turned in like they were trying to.
I don't know. He's still a heartthrob.
Yeah, it was like a door was opening.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he also broke his thumb in that scene. But what's funny is in the middle of filming this, he got the script for Risky Business.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Damn, good for him.
Yeah, good for him. And he was one of the more minor characters in the movie too. So
yeah, he was. He really was.
That's in the book as well too.
Oh, was he?
In the book? Yeah, he was probably the least mentioned member of the Greasers. Two-bit close second.
Because he really was just like Soda Pop's buddy.
That's it. Really, it was just
they worked together and hung out, and Soda Pop really didn't have a big role either.
Debatable.
Master debatable.
Okay, so another fun fact.
I thought that was the last one.
Nope, that was just fun facts about the filming production piece.
Let's
keep going.
Let's do it.
The poster and the movie cover that you're so familiar with.
The one where they're all casual laughing at each other and Tom Cruise is trying to flex his muscles as much as possible.
That he doesn't have.
That was a candid shot.
Nice.
Hey, he had a ripped abdomen.
Yes, he always has. Even in his 50s.
The poster itself was supposed to be them all being really serious and really tough and really badass looking. And what happened was they started making jokes. And
somebody farted.
Ralph Macchio actually was giving Leif. Is that correct?
Leif Garrett.
No, he's not in the poster. Ralph Macchio is.
No, I know he's not in the poster.
I'm sorry.
So Leif Garrett had walked over to the table with all the food for the cast. And the Greasers were kind of like, wait, we're hungry. We want to eat that too.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ralph Macchio made a comment to him about, you know, basically save some for us, you know, us Greasers, and everybody got hysterical laughing, and it was them all laughing and jubilant and looking at each other when the picture was actually taken.
Well, it's that poster is burned in my memory. And the only one that looks like he's trying to be, shut up. The only one that looks like they're trying to be tough is Emilio Estevez. Yes. He's the only one with a serious look on his face.
He's the only one that's trying to still kick.
So he probably didn't find it funny.
Well, no, it's like everybody else heard the joke and laughed and didn't think a picture was going to be taken right then.
Right.
So, because a couple of them, like Derry's laughing, Matt Dillon's laughing, some more than others. So, yeah, that's interesting, though.
What else? C. Thomas Howell was making faces at Diane Lane in the scene where they were meeting the two of them before the Rumble. And it was panning back and forth from her face to his face. When the camera was on her face, he was making faces at her and trying to break her character.
Oh, that's professional.
And afterwards, she got so upset and she asked him why he was doing that. And he said Coppola told him to.
From what I've heard, he's a nut job. So I don't doubt it.
So I thought that was kind of funny. So after the movie was filmed, Coppola actually brought the cast and the movie to the school and the students that asked him to write.
That's badass.
Yeah, for real.
For a private screening.
I like that. Yeah. That's probably the best one so far.
I thought that was pretty neat.
It's up there.
I think it might be the best.
It's up there.
What else do we have? So this was also Rob Lowe's first film debut. And it took him 23 years for him to see the deleted scenes that included him. He never saw them.
Really?
Yeah. So it took him until it was re-released for him to ever see the extended scenes that had more of his acting in it.
Nice.
Let's see. Oh, I thought this was neat too. Francis Ford Coppola extended the sunset scene with the Stay Gold song. He wanted the sunset to last longer than the sunsets actually did. So he recorded the sunset in Oklahoma and then he put up a giant screen behind them and just had it on a loop. So he was able to make that scene longer.
I think he could have shortened it.
Yeah, I don't know that it was necessary, but it was. Definitely I didn't know
it was necessary to him. I trust his judgment.
It gave me part of the undertones.
All right. The other thing that he did
made me want to touch myself.
That's not the song.
Oh.
He also brought in rain machines for the filming of the Rumble scene.
Because that rain comes in way too perfectly with the action.
Right. And part of it was that when they were filming it over that week of time, some days it was raining, some days it wasn't. So to keep continuity. So it had to be
consistent.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, that's the end of my fun facts. I know they went on forever, but.
Not forever enough.
There was just a couple of them.
that weren't up to par with the other ones?
No, there's just a couple total.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh. All right. So do we want to go to budget first or do we want to go to ratings? Luke, your choice.
Budget, it's got 185,000.
Okay. Justin?
1 million.
10 million budget.
And Essie Hinton got paid $500. She got hosed.
She had a cameo in the movie too, though. So there's that.
She should have got paid for that shit too.
She did. That the $500 was for the rights to the book.
And so what'd she get paid for the cameo?
She got a percentage. So
okay, 10 million
box office.
Are we talking to date, like, or not? No,
1983.
All right, box office. I'm gonna go 17.5 million.
Justin,
28.2,
33.7.
My God, we are so off our game.
It was a hit.
You could say that again.
I mean,
at 10 cents a movie.
Yeah.
Well, straight maybe not up, 10 right?
cents, but yeah.
I mean, movies were cheap.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
Well, people didn't have as much to do as they do these days back then. So
that's true.
Yeah.
All right. So, Luke, this was your pick. Yes, would you start us off with your rating?
Well, like I said in the intro, I feel this one of the untouchable movies that I will lose faith in the world if it's ever remade. And that's up there with Jaws.
Which is being remade, right?
Rumor has it. Yeah. Okay, sorry. So, I mean, I can't tell you how far my soul will drop if I ever find out that this is being remade. I give this an A plus just because the effect it had on me as a kid and the fact that my friend Justin is shaking his head at me right now for some reason. It's untouchable. It's a masterpiece. You can debate that all you want, but in the end, the vast majority of people on this earth that are familiar with it will agree with me rather than criticize it.
Really?
Oh, okay. You don't think so?
I don't know either way.
Then don't say really in such a contemptuous way.
I was just wondering if you're as confident as you sounded.
Be nice.
I am nice.
He's Justin. He disagrees with me for a living.
Okay. Luke gives it an A+.
A+.
It gets him in his feels. Justin, what's your rating?
I think you should go first.
Okay. I give it a B+. I enjoyed it. I really liked it. Yes, I would watch it again. When it comes to coming of age movies and teenage struggles, it's just not my favorite of the three that I'd mentioned.
Nothing.
I just happen to prefer the other ones over it, but it doesn't mean that it didn't get me in my feels, and it absolutely was well done.
I think if you had watched the one without all the
original
extra scenes,
the original, but definitely better.
Yes, without a doubt.
Yeah,
but that's B+ is still good though.
And so I that's just it. I actually said when we left the movie, I'd like to see the original with the original score
straight up.
So I think that would make a difference. Yeah. But a B+, I mean, solid, strong B+, not like an 85, like an 89, almost an A status.
There's something to be said about that.
Justin.
What's your rating?
My rating's a B. And if we were watching the original, my rating would probably be higher. I just...
Like how much higher? Like B+, A-?
Potentially A-, yeah.
Okay.
I think the score and all the Elvis music kind of lost me.
Well, I mean...
It lost me with part of that. It made me get inside my head, which is maybe where I was picking up on a lot of things that you guys didn't, because I was looking for something to attach to, because I wasn't getting all the feels like I did from the original.
Well, I mean, when we say we're doing our rating, I'm not rating the one we watched in the theaters. I'm just rating it based on my memory of,
oh no, I'm God rating knows the
how
movie
many times I've seen the original.
I'm rating the movie we watched.
Fair enough. I mean, okay.
And, you know, I think the directing was great. I think the acting was great for the most part. It didn't have the emotional impact that the original did.
And there's somebody said something to be said about the musicality that will do that.
I mean, it provides the mood, and it's a lot of time is directly linked to the feeling that you're feeling comes straight from the music, not necessarily what's on the screen.
Or it could be argued that it's enhanced, but I do think that it helps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Luke, there's movies that you've seen the music that drives you insane, and it's hard for you to get past.
I'll never get past.
So, right. Yeah. Right. So I think that's probably an impact.
True romance.
So we got an A+, we have a B+, and we have a B. So I think that puts us in an A-.
A-, B+.
Yeah.
We'll go A-, because Luke looks angry.
I was trying to forget the true romance.
I think that's
music.
An A-.
I would say so too. So. Justin's doing math on his hand.
I am.
Okay. Well, he can do math. I'll tell you about the critics' ratings on it.
Okay.
So it received from IMDb. Do you guys want to
9.1.
9.1. Justin?
7.4.
7.1.
Are we talking the extended one? Or just the movie
just
in
the
general?
Outsiders.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes?
81.
Justin?
83.
63. Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow. Is that the critic or the audience score? It must be the critics. I bet.
It just said Rotten Tomatoes has 63%.
Wow. All right, I'm going to guess Google users, 96% of them like this movie. Oh, yeah.
Do you have a guess?
Like
82.
91.
Wow. Well,
there we go. See?
So, and it got a 4.5 out of 5 on Vudu. Okay. Whatever that means.
I don't give a fuck about Vudu.
Vudu's cool.
What is it? It's a streaming service?
It was like one of the first players, you know, when you used to buy DVDs and Blu-rays where you'd get like your digital copy.
Sure.
So it was like an aggregate. You could get your digital copy from all the different theaters and play it through Vudu later for free.
So it was like a streaming service
before streaming service. Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of phased out now.
I think you can stream on there now, but nobody really uses it.
I got you.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for joining us for The Outsiders, the complete novel.
The complete novel.
The complete movie.
Yeah.
Novel.
Movie. Well, they called it the complete novel.
Will you do me one favor?
Yes.
Socias.
Socias.
She got it.
Okay.
Socias.
It's weird.
It's cute when you say socias, though.
Suspect.
It's weird.
It is. Say it again.
No.
No, come on.
Socias.
Right on.
God you damn, got you do that.
I don't
well.
Enunciate
Dude,
well.
Dude, you're getting
you
turned on
that.
By this? What?
I am.
Okay. All right. We're signing off. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Bye.